Hello. Right, before we begin, I wanted to highlight some key episodes in case you've missed them before, or if this is the first time you're listening, that you can go and check them out after this one. So if you're a mortgage broker, mortgage advisor, work in the mortgage space, I would highly recommend checking out episode number 153 and 154. That was a two-part series on 9 different ways that you can generate mortgage leads. Now, if you work in pensions, investments, and you want to get more pension leads, I would check out episode 159. That was a special all about pensions. If it's bridging that you like, that you're what you're into, that you want to get more of those kind of inquiries, check out episode 160. And if it's equity release and you want to get more inquiries for that, check out episode 161. Right, enjoy the show. Hi heroes, this is Alex Curtis coming at you. I just wanted you to know that the Advisors Assemble podcast has always been and always will be a reflection of the world right outside our window. That world may change and evolve, but the one thing that will never change is the way that we tell our stories of heroism. If you didn't get that, that was a Marvel reference, a Stan Lee quote, you know, Advisors Assemble, Avengers Assemble, all that. But I want to welcome you to the Business Superheroes series, where I interview some incredible heroes that change the world, or I've got the potential to change the world, or change the world of lots of individuals. And I think they've got something that could really help you and your business and help you grow. So I really want you to buckle up, sit down, enjoy the ride, because I have got a spectacular guest who I'm going to introduce right now. Hello and welcome back to the Advisors Assemble podcast. We've got an absolute stranger on, Mr. Craig Skelton. It's only like what, your third time on, something like that?
I think it is. Yeah, I think it's the third time. It is. Yeah. Yes, definitely third time.
I think Ash Borland will be getting a bit sort of worried about his record of appearances that you're going to overtake.
I think that's safe. I think his yeah, record is safe. To be fair.
He's probably in double figures. But good to see you, mate. We've had a day of pretty much spending most of the day together, because we were recording your podcast earlier, weren't we? We had a little break. Absolutely. For lunch, and then we're back on it.
Yeah, exactly. So you were, we've got to know each other pretty well today. What's been going on in our world?
we have. Cool. So if anyone hasn't seen or heard your podcast, the Mortgage Broker Broadcast, and kind of what you're doing to try and help mortgage brokers, do you want to give us a little kind of intro into sort of what that's all about?
Absolutely, yeah. So I've got a podcast, as you said, the Mortgage Broker Broadcast, which is just really aimed at, a lot of the time it's got guests on there. There's a few of just me rambling on to the mic myself, and I'm just trying to sort of educate mortgage brokers who are either looking to become mortgage brokers or moving from employed, self-employed bank to estate agency to self-employed firms or directly authorized and things like that. So just trying to educate people, really, just having a place where they can have a listen, think about sort of what they're looking to do. I've got guests on there who have probably done what they're looking to do. So I've got guests on there that have moved from employed, self-employed, who have moved from totally non-experienced mortgage brokers, and they've talked about their journey into the world of mortgage broking. And yeah, that's on the Mortgage Broker Broadcast. And then I've also got the YouTube channel, which is just really, again, just very short videos, just about questions that mortgage brokers tend to have. All I've done is collect a load of questions that I always get asked by brokers who are either going employed, self-employed, or looking to become mortgage brokers for the first time. And just, I've got like a list of questions, and then I just create videos around those questions just to then help people who are looking to get into the industry, really. So it's not anything, no sort of plug for myself or sales or anything like that. It's just a case of being a point, sort of somewhere where people can go and just answer the questions that they may be wanting to answer, and then ask the network or the firm they're going to work with, or have nobody to ask, really, or nobody to turn to with it.
Yeah, nice. I mean, we get asked a lot of questions, and that I have no experience of, because I've never given advice, or none of the team here are mortgage brokers. So it's kind of like that side of things that when we get involved in them, everything before the phone call, I guess, and then the actual advising and doing the job is not really something that you will really learn on here. So I think if you are listening, thinking why would it be good for me? It's that kind of side of things that you would get much more benefit than listening to us.
I think that's it. I think it's just because I don't offer opinions. I'm not telling people what to do or anything like that. I'm just drawing on the years of experience I've had in banking, sort of financial services and mortgage advising to estate agency, mortgage advising, mortgage broking, and then more recently over the last 4 or 5 years, self-employed and being a mortgage broker and running my own firm as well. So I've just got, I think it's just drawing on the years of experience, Alex. I think that's what it talks about really. But there's no sell or anything like that. It's just information really. People can make their own mind up in terms of what they want to do and whether it's right for them.
Fantastic. Love it. Nice one. And then, so how old is your firm? That's like four and a half years?
Just 4 years. The 4th of July, 2017. So just over 4 years.
Wow. Excellent. Wow. And then, if I remember rightly, you started and there was like one or two advisors and where are you at now?
Yes. Yeah, so when first started out, there was myself. I was advising, being a mortgage broker, and two advisors that set up, that sort of joined me at the setup time. Quickly went to three advisors and myself. When we started out, it was purely the CS Mortgage Solutions brand, and we've just sort of grown organically over the last 4 years. We've got the three brands now, so we've got CS Mortgage Solutions, which is the baby really. Then we've got CS Retirement Solutions, because we now do pension investment advice and we've got advisors doing that. And then the CS Wealth Solutions as well, which is pretty much like more in the investment stuff, which is works hand in hand with the retirement solutions. And yeah, so that's current count. We've got 17 advisors in the firm. So including mortgage advisors and financial advisors.
Fantastic. Nice. So you've been there, done it. I remember we did a whole episode on recruitment as well before, because I think that's one thing we get asked quite a bit as well. People sort of keen on, they especially if they've kind of learned how to generate more inquiries, or you know, a lot of it is to attract a lot of the best people. It is like being able to give them leads, isn't it? Because that's what a lot of people struggle with, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely it is. And I think I'm sort of, particularly recently, I'm hearing quite a few brokers that are looking to grow, and because they have got an abundance of leads, they then think, well, I'm going to take an advisor on, but which is all great. I'm all for the growth and that, and we have grown. And I think it's just understanding from the owner's point of view, if they're a sole trader taking somebody on, these people do take a lot of time and effort to train them and get the support and things like that as well. So absolutely all for growth and new blood coming into mortgage broking, and the way that the mortgage broking world is changing with technology and stuff like that, is absolutely an exciting and amazing time to be mortgage broking right now with the way that it's going. But yeah, it's just making sure that the you've got the time to give the new brokers the support, especially if they're coming inexperienced, because they do need that hand holding and just feeling as though they've got somebody to turn to.
Okay, fantastic. Awesome. Right. So I'm doing my business superhero series. I've called you on because I feel you're a bit of a superhero. And I like to start off with, I've asked you to come up with three facts where only one of them is true. And I've got to guess which one, which is my favorite bit. So what's your first fact / might not be a fact?
Okay. So my first one is, I'm just wondering whether you're listening to my tone and things like that when
all the time. Yeah, there's lots of mind games going on here, so be prepared for questioning.
Fine. Oh wow. Fine. So my first fact is that my golf handicap is zero. So basically, I play off scratch.
Okay, I never play golf, so I don't know what that means. Is that good or bad?
That is good. So basically that's good.
You're on par, basically.
You're on par, exactly. So if you're on a golf course and you are playing a 72 par golf course, means you have no handicap, so you have no, so basically you should be playing it 72 strokes, and where you might be sort of somebody who's on a handicap of 8, they would mean that they will have 8 free strokes, shall we say, during the course of the 18 holes, and they will be playing off 8. So that means that they should get around that course in 80.
Right. Okay. Okay. I think I've heard you talk about golf before, and I can imagine you having your own set of clubs. So it's not totally far-fetched, I don't think. When did you start playing golf? How old were you when you first started taking it?
About 11, 12 years old. I got mad into my football at the time. And yeah, but I enjoyed sport as a kid, to be fair, Alex. So I loved doing every possible sport that I could. So it was just naturally that I could play golf.
Yeah. Okay. We've had plenty of practice then.
Yeah, plenty of time. Thanks for that. For a few years. You've had a few years.
I'm not saying anything. Let's swiftly move on then, shall we? So I don't have to dig any holes. What was your second one?
The second one was that I have sparred with Sheffield legend boxer Mr. Kell Brook.
Okay. So how? So what was he with you? You popped in, or what was it? Did you have to pay for it? Was it a charity? You won a prize or something?
It was no. It was just somebody that I knew through somebody I knew who ran the gym, and it was one of those things. Knowing that I'm a Sheffield lad, born and bred, and I was had the opportunity to get into I do like my boxing, and I do like keeping fit, and boxing is one of the things that I keep fit. So I just thought that the take the chance of the opportunity and it was in his sort of downtime, shall we say. He's not fought for a few years, and hopefully a fight with Amir Khan up and running. But it wasn't anything too serious. So because obviously the insurance wouldn't cover me in terms of there. That's fact number two.
Okay. Again, I can kind of see maybe that happening, although it's okay. It doesn't seem totally impossible. What was the third one?
The last one was that I'm level 2 qualified as in sailing.
It's definitely a theme, definitely a sort of a active kind of theme. I didn't know there were sailing qualifications, I'm going to be honest. I thought you just learned on the job or. So, how often do you go sailing then? Because you're quite inland, aren't you? I suppose you can go on lakes and stuff, can't you?
The lakes, yeah, absolutely. So I spend quite a lot of time.
Yeah, that's definitely a lie.
I spend over in the Lake District, so.
I think that one's a lie because it took way too long to think about it. So I'm writing that one off, whether it feels more, it's probably that feels the most feasible. But I think I can tell that you had to think too much about that one. So I'm going to write that one off, but I'm going to guess at the end.
Okay.
And I'm veering towards the boxing. So I'm going to, but I'll see if I change my mind later on. So I wanted to find out what your superpower is and how you think you kind of help people. And I assume this is kind of, because you're not really sort of advising anymore, aren't you? You're sort of taking this sort of principal role where you're sort of building your team, you're doing your marketing, your personal branding and everything like that. So I'm assuming it's got something to do with your team and business. But what do you feel is like your superpower?
I think, in answer to your question, I am. I'm no longer advising. So it's not something that I don't get to see clients day to day. But the one big thing for me is responsibility. Ownership and responsibility. So advisors, I'm a firm believer of responsibility in my life. Whatever happens to me in my life, it's my responsibility. We'll not talk about the opposite to that, but it's all about responsibility. So I learned a long, long time ago that if I'm pointing a finger at somebody, there is 3 pointing back at me, which sounds very basic, but it sticks in my, it's poignant in my mind.
And is that something you talk about when you're hiring people in? That You're bringing people into
talk about, yeah. I think it's like, because it's so one of my, one thing that I really sort of do take quite seriously is responsibility. So I think we talk about that recruiting, we talk about that. So the advisors that are experienced, looking to go self-employed, I talk to them about their responsibility. And even like the people that are coming into the mortgage broking world who have never been a broker before and look into life-changing careers, I talk again about, yes, I will help. Yes, I will support and all those sorts of things. But they've got to want to do it themselves. It's their responsibility. It's their life. It's their careers. It's whatever they're looking to do. That's the thing. I think that's, I'm always consistent with that. Whenever I'm talking, really, to be fair, it's, in everything that I do, I always look at it in terms of responsibility for myself and my business. And so whatever happens in my business is my responsibility, nobody else's. Whatever happens in the advisors, it's their responsibility. Because generally you find that we can always do something about it. What if something isn't going quite to plan, there is things that we can do to rectify that. And that's why it's always about responsibility.
Mm. I don't know why I've thought about this, but loosely bringing it into the superhero world, when you were saying that you can, you know, your advisors have got to take their responsibility, I immediately thought of The Matrix and Morpheus when he says, I can only show you the doors, you have to walk through them. I kind of wow. See you as that, like, Morpheus type character, and you've got lots of little Neos in your team, and you're kind of like showing them the path, but they're the ones ultimately that have got to do it.
Yeah.
I've never thought about that.
No, that's a good point. I've never thought of it that way, but that is exactly how I run my life. That is exactly how I work with the advisors. It's like, so we can show the doors, but then it's for them to run through them without pausing or hesitation.
Nice. So then how does this, you know, well, there's no point in having superpower if it doesn't benefit anyone. So how do you think that then makes it the world a better place, I suppose, for you and for those people around you?
I think by taking responsibility, if your immediate mindset is responsibility, so whatever happens in your life, with be it work or home life or whatever, if you've got that immediate thought that it's your responsibility, you'll get to a solution quicker than you would if you go and start to look for excuses or start to look for blame and things like that. You'll sort of dwell on the things more, and you'll be frustrated more if you start to look for excuses rather than actually looking for solutions. Mm-hmm. So if you then have that mentality that if something doesn't go right, it's like things in my life will go wrong every single day. Running the business, things will go wrong every single day. They just do. But my mindset is that it's my responsibility. So if that's happened, there's something I've done or something that ultimately is my responsibility to put that right. So I think if you have that way of thinking very quickly, and this is habit forming, and that's what you've got, it is about, this is not something I've always, this has not been my mantra my whole life. This is like something I've learned over the years, that I think it's just, if you have got that habit, then you'll just get to the solution so much quicker. You won't look for like blame or excuses or anything like that, and you'll just find a way out quicker if you believe it's your responsibility. Does that make sense? Am I going too deep into
this? Yeah, no, absolutely. No, good. I know. I like it. So you said it wasn't something that you always did. Then was there something that, or was it something you just gradually learned, or was there a particular moment or something that someone said or something that made you think, I'm going to do this differently?
I don't think it was anything anybody said. I think it was sort of gradual. I do read a lot. I do take on, I do read a lot of books from people, experienced people on various things. And I think it was just sort of a natural thing that's grown with me over the time of reading. And also as well, so I think I'm a very positive person. I am with everything that I do. I wish I could say no more times than I do say yeah, but I'm very much this is what we'll do. Yes, that will do this. And so I'm that's my own fault. Again, that's my responsibility. But I think it's just something gradual over time. But I think it was something that being sort of led down by people and sort of not having total control over situations and things like that. I think it just like then dwindled over time that I've worked with some amazing people over the years, but then I've worked with some also amazing, like some, I'll use the word term you say amazing, because I have learned from them, but I've learned how not to do things from them, kind of thing. So you take the best of both worlds. And I think, so wrapped around all that, I see people who don't take responsibility for themselves and their lives and their business and whatever they're doing. And I think it's just, I just don't see myself as that person. It's always been very much responsible for myself. I think it's always been in there. I think it's just been allowed, like it's just as the hairs have got grayer on my head, I think it's just been more of a sort of naturally. See, I'm just going to get that in before you say anything else. I commented on your beard earlier, so I can't comment on that. So
you did. Oh, excellent. And there was, so we mentioned Morpheus earlier being like a guide for Neo, and like every superhero has like a guide. You know, we were talking off air earlier about Star Wars in that Yoda character and that Mr. Miyagi type character. Did you, are there any people that, famous or not, I guess, that have kind of really helped you get where you are today, or sort of help you sort of realize your potential, if you like?
I don't think it's any, it's a good, great question to ask this. I do look at this quite a lot and think, I haven't really got that one, do you know, that one person you think actually what they've done and what they've achieved or the way that they are or things like that. There's not that one person. I like to learn and listen and observe and read and things like that, and just take bits in terms of, like, I like watch a lot of things, like the book I'm reading at the moment, like Alex Ferguson on leadership and things like that, and taking, there's bits in that, in his book that I can't relate to, but there's certain bits in the book that I can relate to, and I just try and pick things out of the books and just think, actually, yeah, I'll have a bit slice of that, and I'll pick that in, and I don't relate to that, so I'm going to put that to one side. And I just try and sort of piece it together to then see how it fits with me. Cause I think that's the sort of thing, is like, it's okay reading books about people and the scenarios and what they've done and what they've achieved and various other things. And you can put people into high esteem, but I don't think there's one sort of, oh my God, like that they are the god of, I know you're going to contradict me with some Marvel or Batman or something like that going on. But for me, there's not that. I just take bits and adapt them for me. Is that, you know, like little bits of,
yeah.
I'm having a little bit of that, and I'll take a bit of that, and actually I don't like that, so I'll throw that one back out there, kind of thing. And sort of, yeah. Again, I'm going a bit deep with this, aren't I? This is getting quite deep.
It's good. Well, I mean, I think, like, I may take it back to superheroes. A lot of them do have the multiple guides. There isn't, you know, like, Luke had Obi-Wan and Yoda and Han, and like all these people that they take things off that help them get where they want to go. So I think that is the same. I suppose it is rarely literally one person. You take the best bits from the bits that you like about certain people.
Yeah,
definitely. They're influenced by a lot, aren't they? Especially books as well. So no, that's cool.
I think it tends to be like, it always tends to be some sort of sport thing that then leads me into something else. So if a sport that I follow or a team that I follow, and I like sort of what he's like, a bit about him, so I've listened, like another podcast that I listened to had Pochettino on, who was the Tottenham coach, being in Southampton and now at PSG. Some of the things on it that he, like, I've listened to a podcast which I was able to listen to him and his thoughts and taking bits from that. But like the coach of a NFL football team that I follow and that I really admire him and his sort of his mindset and the way that he does things. So and there's certain things with him that I just wouldn't dream of doing. So yeah, it is, I think a lot of it is sport analogy, but then the more I've read and more, then it's then putting that into more of a business world with business books and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, I think the sport, there's loads of like overlaps of sport. So I think it's maybe the high performance podcast that you've.
It is, exactly. Yeah, it is.
I remember Johnny Wilkinson on there as well, and him sort of saying, one thing I always remember, I think I did a little in between episode on it, that he was like, you look at the best footballers and the best sports people, they're really fluid. They react to what's going around. So like Roger Federer, Messi, Ronaldo, they're not like rigid and structured, and he felt he was too structured and rigid that he would like plan everything out and it would all be like, he wouldn't sort of, he wouldn't live in the moment and change and react to the moment. It was always like, he was following like processes, and he wished he was more fluid in the way that he approached it. And it made me think about sort of business as well. Like, you've got, you can't just follow someone else's blog post on how to rank on Google. You've got to be fluid based on what's happening to your particular website. Or if you've got like a paid ad campaign, you can, if you do everything structured the way it should be and don't react, then you could be, you're not improving it as well as you could be. So I always take things off, like sports things as well. Was there one thing from Poch that you that really sort of rung true for you?
I think it was just the way that he trapped people. I think it was that he was only as good as the team he had, and he was very much into, like, he was just lucky to have the players around him. And they were just the way that, when you look back, and the testament is when the manager leaves, and when he left, and like Harry Kane and Dele Alli, and the way they reacted to when he left Tottenham. And not that I'm a Tottenham fan, by the way, because I'm not at all. But I think just the way that they felt he and we reacted. But when he went in there, he knew the names of the, like, the tea lady, the guy who washed the kit. He just introduced himself to everybody and just treat everybody as though, like, it wasn't the case of he was. I think people can get too wrapped up in the egos and things like that sometimes. I think, like, things like, and Poch doesn't do that. He's very much of, well, I'm here to work with the team. I'm here to understand them. I need to treat them as individuals and just really sort of work with them as individual, but at the same time, knowing everything about the club, knowing the infrastructure of the club, knowing who's who, because everybody plays a part in that. And I think that's a big thing, is like, you're not walking around there thinking, I am the boss kind of thing. It's not like that. It's a case of everybody plays the part for this club to be successful. And I think that's the sort of the way that I like with the people in the firm. Like, I don't see myself, I've never seen myself as, oh, I'm the principal of CS Financial Group. It's not, it's like, well, we're all in this together. We're a team. I've got my job to do in this. You've got your job to do. And we just do as jobs, and that's what we're here to do kind of thing. And I think that's, I think it's sort of too easy sometimes to get, I think if you put yourself up with an ego and stuff like this, it's easier to, the more you're going to, like, what is it, the higher you go, the bigger you fall kind of thing, whatever the saying is. I think that's the thing for me, is like, I've not got that ego. I've not got that. I am who I am, and I just want everybody in the team and the business to be happy doing what they're doing and feel actually they're playing a part to what we're trying to achieve as a business. And I'm very, very lucky that I've got, like, my, like, Pochettino inherited a squad. Like, I've, like, built the squad, but, like, I don't see myself as any leader or anything like that. It's just a case of I'm there doing my job in this business.
Yeah, nice. I think I've taken that from sport as well. Played a lot of rugby. I mean, you win and lose together. You sort of live and die together as a team. I've always played team sports rather than doing like athletics or like those kind of sports on your own sort of thing. Always been more into the team, and try and bring that in as well, that we'll, you know, succeed and fail together.
I think that's like is very much a, it's not rugby. I played rugby at school, and it's not something I ever got into. I just played rugby because I was quick. I didn't really get the whole, I was running around the pitch like a spider. I didn't matter what direction. I just knew I could get with the try line, and just didn't matter whether I went 10 yards back or 10 yards forward. I just needed to get over that line. But then, and so it wasn't until my son, who's like now 15, kind of 16, and like he got to high school, and he said, Dad, I'm not playing football anymore. I'm playing rugby league. And so, like, I never expected this or anything like that. But it wasn't until then that he got involved with his local club and the school and things like that. And you just thought, wow, this is just this is something I could have put on and thrown you out a little bit, because I'm an FA qualified football coach. So I've done my badge. I've done only done level one, so nothing of grandeur. Coach kids, I'm qualified to coach kids football. And so it wasn't, rugby league was something I never, and it wasn't until then. And then just my experience of coaching a football team, and then watching him with the coaches and the parents and the families of a rugby league team, And it was just totally different. It was just straight, like, in terms of the whole team as one, we're in this together kind of thing, was just amazing. And I just loved that. And I never realized that to a certain extent until, like, he was started playing rugby league sort of four years ago.
Yeah. I think with rugby league, you cannot have a week. You're only as good as your weakest player as well, I think. It's such a team sport. Such fitness levels are insane. Like, oh, I mean, I'm a rugby union man, but the speed at which they play rugby league, and that you have to be together.
Yeah.
Like in defense and in attack. If you do anything on your own, you the team loses. You have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Now, I think you can take a lot from sport. I think you definitely can take a lot from sport in business, because it is if you're growing a team, I think. Or even if you're on your own, you know, if you're a tennis player. So it's like targets, isn't it? It's like self-development. It's like improvement. It's like wanting to win, to succeed, to be motivated, to, you know, you've got to do the reps and the training to be successful at sport, and the same in business, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You've got to put the practice in before to be on top of your game, absolutely.
Cool. And then the other thing I was going to say about the whole, when Poch left Tottenham, I was thinking that you can... I'm thinking about Jose Mourinho, and I'm thinking about how he was with his first Chelsea group, and like Ijeka Johnson and Michael Essien and things like that. They were like, he was the best boss we've ever had. And he was like I think Essien called him like a father figure. And I think he had that Inter Milan as well. I think something changed with him. He always had an ego, but I think there's something changed with him that he kind of lost touch of that relationship with his players and his team.
I think that was down to like insecurity of losing his job and things like that, and getting sacked and things like that.
I think he got the sack because the whole physio thing with Hazard, when he had a go at the physio for coming on, he like laid into the physios for going in to treat Hazard and proper laid into them. And it's like, well, Hazard could have got up and carried on playing, and they lost that game. I think he just lost all credibility from that moment on. And then he's just never been quite the same again, I don't think.
No. Well, that was blame. He blamed that.
Yeah, is that saying? Yeah, exactly. He blamed the treated the physios different than the player, I think. He absolutely laid into those physios. But the player was the one, you know, if he didn't want them to come on, get up and Garrett, if he wasn't injured, do you know what I mean? I found that. I would have been a bit like, that's not right. And that is, like you said earlier, treating people differently because of the level they're at or the seniority or whatever. The players can't play without the physios, so you should treat them with the same respect. Treat the players.
Exactly.
Cool. Right. What's your kryptonite? What's your weakness?
Blame. I absolutely.
It's the opposite of responsibility. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that was the thing where I thought to myself, it is just that whole sort of mindset of it's somebody else's fault, not my own kind of thing. Yeah. And litter.
I remember seeing your notes. Yeah, and litter. Yeah.
I just don't get that. I do not get that you could be walking along and see somebody that on a bench that has to walk past a bin to get to where they're going and just leave it on a bench. It just amazes me. But again, that's like, it goes back to responsibility, doesn't it? They don't take responsibility for themselves in terms of their place on this planet. And that's getting even deeper now, and that's a whole different topic. But I think it's blame. I think it's just that whole culture of that we can get. It's just a waste of time. It's just you can blame anybody else all you want, but it's not going to get you any quicker to the solution. It might make you feel better for that split second of it's their fault, it's not mine. But I think you can go two ways. I think you can either be a person that is a blame person and that's who you are, or then you can be a person that takes responsibility. You don't find many people that sort of deviate between the two. I don't know. I might be going a bit too off piece with that. I think
coming back to sport, I remember playing rugby for our club team, and I remember being under, like, our coaches were not great because they would be shouting at you if you made a mistake. I remember playing within myself because I was so afraid to make a mistake because getting blamed for dropping. I was like, you know, like 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, kid, afraid. And I remember playing for the school team when those coaches weren't around, absolutely different player, completely just played with freedom. And I think it's the same in business. If you've got people in your team that are afraid to make a mistake, I think it's, is it the guy that invented, he was trying to invent at Bostik, he was trying to invent the strongest glue and invented the paper, you know, the paper note things, you know, the post-it notes.
Okay.
He invented the weakest instead.
Wow.
So if he was not allowed to or was afraid of making a mistake, we wouldn't have post-it notes, or that company wouldn't have had post-it notes, and it's been their biggest selling product. So they created a culture where you can make mistakes, you can not succeed, and you've got the freedom to do that, to find something different. But if that guy who invented it there was this culture of like, oh, you're a failure if you don't make the best, the stickiest glue, then they would have had their best-selling product. So wow, it's kind of like
that story before. I've honestly never heard that story before.
I can't remember where from. I hope it's true. And it's just a great story.
It doesn't matter if it's not true or not. This is a great story. It's absolutely the right thing, because that you can't be afraid. Anything, you can't be afraid to make mistakes, because you're going to make mistakes. That happens. And you just got to, if you've got the freedom to make mistakes, you'll learn from them and then make sure it doesn't happen again. And then the more confident you are, because I think mistakes can happen when you don't feel confident about what you're doing. I think that's and if you're not, like for you going into like playing rugby, then you got the ball, you're more likely to drop it because you've got that fear of dropping it, and you're more likely to happen.
Exactly. So
it's just, make sense. It doesn't make sense at all, but that is the thing. That's unfortunate. They say that is the way of the world, and there are situations and employers and teams and things like that. They're very much like that, aren't they? So you're afraid to drop the ball, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Every hero having an enemy, or, you know, something bad to happen if we didn't have our superhero. What do you think? I suppose with your team then, if you didn't have this kind of this responsibility culture, what do you think would happen if that wasn't in place?
I think you'd find that you might be quite a bit of a revolving door of people coming in and out. I think we wouldn't have the team ethics that we have. And I think the thing as well, because people have got plenty of choice out there for people to be being a self-employed mortgage broker, there is plenty of places to do that and plenty of firms to work under and work with. And I think if you've not got that, the right culture, it's easier for people to move on. But when you've got the culture right, and that culture is not down to, that's not down to me or any other person. It's the whole team culture of what we've got. And I think that's the beauty of the culture that we have got in the firm, is that, like you said, like earlier on, when we started out with myself and with Eve and Siobhan, there was just the three of us. But we trusted each other. We knew each other. We would have each other's backs. The integrity was there. The honesty was there. And then as we've grown, and Lisa joined very quickly, and then as we've sort of grown, people have just bought into that culture, because if they don't, then they get moved on fairly quickly by the team. Funnily enough, it seems to be do you know what I mean? It's like they don't fit in with the culture. So I think that the thing is, if we didn't have the right culture, then it certainly wouldn't be, I don't think I'd have 17 advisors all enjoying the work-life balance, earning the money they want to earn. Yes, having the ups and downs of being a mortgage broker, and the days and weeks of frustration, and the days and weeks of having good times and things like that. But then they do have that freedom. I think micromanagement has always been something that I absolutely hate. I don't get it. People don't have the freedom to do what they want to do to win a certain promise. I get people are employees, absolutely, and they've got a job to do. But just let them get on with it. Just get them. And if there is a slacker, if somebody that's not doing it, then fine, just get rid of them. But let the people, I think the problem is because of the slackers, that's probably the wrong word totally get, but I'm going to say anyway, because of the slackers in the team, then the really good people are sort of tarnished with the, like you said, that you're only as good as the worst person in your team. And that's the sort of thing. If the worst person in the team is a slacker and not doing the job and what they should be doing, you can't treat the whole team that way. So like if somebody's good at what they do and puts that extra shift in, and they want to go home early tonight, or they don't want to work this Saturday, or they want a day off with a kid, just, or the children, or whatever. Just let them do it. Because those people will put, when you need them, they'll put that extra shift in for you. If you haven't got that, they're just going to be,
100%,
not bought into you or anything like that. It's like you with how you run your firm. I get emails from, like, out of hours from your team, and I think, well, wow, like, Amy's emailed me at like 12 o'clock at midnight, which I'm, by that time, I'm done because I'm up like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock the next morning. But I think fair play. Obviously, that works for Amy, and you give her that freedom that she's got family and things like that. And just, I think the thing with it, I always go back to the, I treat people how I expect to be treated myself, and I don't expect to be called in the morning saying, Craig, what are you going to do today? And then rang at lunchtime and said, Craig, what have you done so far today? And what's your plans for this afternoon? And then rang at the end of the day saying, have you done what you said you're going to do today? Oh my God, like, why would you want to be in that world? Like, why would you wake up and a human being and think, do you know what? I want to be in that world. Or at the same time thinking, I want to manage something in that world. Like, what's the point? Will you look back on that and think, do you know what? I created an amazing team, culture, whatever happens, did I get on with people, have respect, did I respect them, did they respect me? And that's what it's all about. I think it's not difficult because it's who I am and the way that I've always been. I think it can be difficult for some people, and I get that. It's like that can be difficult for them, having sort of micromanagement and doing that is not difficult for them, whereas it's just so it is each to their own, but it's just not for me in that world. But I think that, going back to your question, I think I wouldn't have the team of advisors I do. And luckily, the team of advisors that I've got that make me smile every day, that we have a laugh together, we've got a great WhatsApp team going on and things like that. So, that's just important.
Excellent. Yeah. No, I think same sort of thing. Like you say, I'll make sure I'm there for them, having a call. Try and get a call in at 9:30 every day, so you're sort of there for them. I never sort of like, or what are you? Yeah, you know, it'll be one of those things you'll ask. Like, is anything? You know, do you need me for anything? Anything going down today? Or are you gonna all that sort of stuff? But I'd never ring them up and say like, what have you? I think if you feel like you need to do that, then you're probably the wrong person that you've got there.
Exactly.
If you have to check up on them, yeah, no, absolutely.
And I think the wrong person yourself. I think if you've got to do, I always sort of said that if I've got to micromanage people, I might as well just do the job myself and make sure it's done right. Like, there's just no point being like that. So,
absolutely. Cool. Right. So some superheroes like Tony Stark, James Bond, those sort of people rely on some cool sort of gadgets. That's my loose little way of bringing in a question of asking if you've got any apps or any technical stuff that you can't live without. Is there anything that you sort of have that you, if I took it away from you, you'd be really annoyed?
I think there's a couple of things I use day in, day out. And I think I use Trello, which is an app that is literally, I absolutely love Trello to bits, organized, got my boards for everything. Now my other app is Todoist. So I love my Todoist and planning and on that. And now that I'm shocked at this. So you'll come up with some analogy of some sort of superhero, hero-esque or whatever the case may be. But Trello and Todoist were two separate apps when I started using them. So Trello, just to explain, Trello board, you can have a board for a project or a board for anything kind of thing. So I have boards for individuals, brands, for like whatever the case may be. I'll have a board for it just so I know. You create these boards and then you can now, they used to be two standalone things. So then you just have Todoist, which is a standalone app, which was exactly that, a to-do list. So you could put in things in terms of what you need to do today, tomorrow, like reoccurring stuff, an absolutely great thing to plan. And I used to work the two together. And when I first started using them both, thinking, I don't get this. Like, do I use Trello or do I use Todoist? And then it wasn't until I thought, actually, I can use both. And then, which was the pivotal moment, they actually came together and they now work together. So Trello and Todoist are integrated apps. So I've got no idea. Is that like Superman and Superwoman marrying each other? I don't know. Like, how does that work? I don't know whether that is the case.
It sounds like Batman and Superman doing a bit of a team up. Yeah, I mean, we used to use Asana. So, I mean, I think Trello was always famous for the boards, and they call them Kanban boards, I think. And you sort of have the different, you do them in, like, in different stages and things like that. So you can move a card across. So if I suppose if yeah. you had, you could have a case and you could have them in, you could have documents, dip, offer, completion. You could move your case along and use your boards like that, can't you?
Yeah, or, exactly.
We have exactly ours for like our content when it's like done the brief, writer, client checkoff, compliance checkoff. So our content pieces go across these boards. I think Trello was big for the boards. And then we used Asana, which had the to-do list thing. And then they brought in boards. I think there's a few of them. We used a thing called ClickUp, which has boards and that you can use them in different views and things like that now. But I think that flexibility of having to-do lists and boards is, yeah, it's a bit of a game changer, I feel, I think. Whether you definitely use Trello and Todoist or ClickUp or whatever. But yeah. Yeah, for me, I mean, this podcast episode, for example. So I can't remember if I did it for you, but I've got automation set up for my guests, and then I'll have it in, so I'll have an email, set email, and that questions link that I sent you. So I put you into the next stage of like invite. So all I put in is your name and email, and you're in schedule, or and then I stick it into the next board for invite, and that triggers the email. And then I could put you in the next board for interview scheduled, and then the next board, and then it will fire it off to the editor on automation. And then when I get it back, he moves it across. So there's so many different ways of organizing all your work. It's brilliant. Love it.
Definitely. I'm going to have a look at those now, because I think it's just what you get used to, isn't it? I think that once you get used to something, it's difficult to change.
I didn't like Trello. Yeah, there was something about Trello I just did not like. And then we used another thing called Basecamp, and then it was just like we used Asana, and this it just felt right. I think you have a little play around with them all, and they're all sort of, in a way, similar. I just don't know what it was about Trello. Maybe it was the boards at the time that I didn't really get. But yeah, really good for handling all your tasks and things like that.
Definitely.
Cool. So we've already had her a bit of a reader, and you mentioned the Fergie book. Is there any other sort of books that have had a real big sort of impact on you?
I think, like I said, I think I always sort of do a bit of research. I don't just buy books on impulse. I think that can be a fault of mine sometimes. I think, it's got to become recommended, or it's got to cut, like, I've got to read some review about it or something like that. So, the Stephen Bartlett book that I read recently, which is, the title is awful. Honestly, when that book came through the door from Amazon and I opened it, and I just happened to leave it downstairs on the side, and Sarah, my wife's going, what are you reading? The Happy Sexy Millionaire. What planet are you on? Kind of thing, thinking, oh my God, like Craig's lost the plot. He's like literally step away from. But in terms of the book itself is unbelievable. Like, honestly, there's so much things in terms of I think the big thing that I took from that was about enjoying the ride. Enjoy, like, don't focus, like, obviously there's always goals to achieve, but achieving your goal, because your goal will always move. If you just, like he said, I wanted a million, I got a million, then it became 3 million, I never actually enjoyed getting to the million, or then there'll always be more, which is, I totally understand. I totally get that. So I think understanding, and then I read quite some time ago was the Mark Manson one, which was The Subtle Art of Not Giving, that I took from that. I think like I said, the most recent one, I do love The Chimp Paradox. I do, like, with Stephen Peters, Chimp Paradox, I love that book. It's such a great book. We've been lucky enough that part of Open Work, we've had one of the guys from the actual firm on and doing a session with their principals and stuff like that. But I'd already read the book already and totally love the chimp book. And I also, I think, who was with it? I read Roy Keane's book recently, the more up-to-date one, and he referred to the Chimp Paradox book about him reading that, and he just sort of said, I stopped reading after a while because I'm just a chimp and that's all I've ever got in my head, kind of thing, which I found very, very funny. So I think reading it, it's just always something that I always do. Like, I don't if I don't get time, it's more of a nighttime thing rather than sat on my, I think if you go to bed and like sort of sat on your phone looking at the screen for an hour or read a book, I just find that that time I would prefer to read and text stuff in, and then I think about things more at that stage, because the way that my mind works is that when I get up in the morning, I have to go to work. It's like I struggle to, if you said to me, right, you're getting up in the morning, then this, you've got to do this, and then start work at 11. My mind just cannot cope with that. It's like, well, I don't get that structured. Like, it doesn't work with my structure to how I am. I get up, take the dogs out, have my breakfast, work. That's how I start. And so then, I struggle to work. I do it on time, but I struggle to work after a certain period of time because I know that I'm not productive at that time. So it's just pointless. So reading is something that I would rather do. I couldn't wake up tomorrow morning and think, right, I'm going to read for an hour before I go to work. Or people like meditate before an hour before they go to work.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I'm up now, I'm working kind of thing. And I'd rather get my job done and then I can read later kind of thing. So that's the way that I read every day. I do take the time to read. It's not something I've always done, but I just think it's better than scrolling through a screen.
Yeah. No, nice. Cool. Yeah, I do need to read. When I go in phases. I'll read a load and then something will happen and I'll be out of the habit and then I'll pick it up again. Yeah, so I'm just not reading much at the minute. But I might get back into it.
Audio books I struggle with. I couldn't do Audible.
I did a bit when I go for a run. And then, so some that I do, some that I don't. Yes, I need to get back in the mood of it, if you like.
And that's the thing, and it's just I think once you get that structure and routine in, and like I have got that structure and routine, then it just happens because it's there. The book's at the side of the bed, and that's it's going to happen, kind of thing. If the book was like in a different room or somewhere else, you probably think, oh, I can't bother. That's a whole other podcast altogether about things and the things I've learned on that kind of thing of creating less friction and stuff like that and making things happen. So
nice, excellent. Well, last thing to ask then, what's the future kind of hold then? I presume sort of growing the team, doing more of both your podcasts and things like that. What is there anything else going on?
No, just enjoying doing what I'm doing still. Like I say, I love working with the team and the advisors I've got in the team, and we will just continue to grow. I'm loving doing the podcasting. I never thought I would, but I'm like now into the routine of it, and I do enjoy doing the podcasting. I'm enjoying doing, like I'm doing the videos. I've got like 2-3 videos a week that are coming out on YouTube just to help brokers, and I love doing that as well. And that and the comments that I get, then makes you feel as though they're worthwhile when you get the feedback about people looking to get into it and how it's helped them. Then like, I'll just continue to do it for as long as I can think about things to talk about.
Excellent.
So that's it really. That's no real talk. We just continue to do what I'm doing.
Fantastic. Well, my man, so if anyone's interested in the podcast, so they can find it on iTunes, Spotify, everywhere. We've got the YouTube channel, so search for Mortgage Broker Broadcast, and then they can find you on you're on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, everywhere, aren't you?
Yep, everywhere. Yeah, absolutely. You should struggle to not find me.
Struggle not to find me. Excellent. So we'll put all the links in, but if you search Craig Skelton, you should stumble across, definitely.
You should do that. There's two Craig Skelton, like I'm on LinkedIn and on YouTube is Craig Skelton UK, because there's a mixed martial arts guy who's called Craig Skelton. I think he's over in the States, so I struggle to get the .com, so I've got UK instead. So I don't think I'll ever get confused. That may be something I could have put on the three questions,
just reminded me when you said the martial arts, I was like, oh my god, the whole Kell Brook thing, I forgot to confirm. So I'm gonna go that you sparred with Kell Brook, but also some people have come on and they've all been true, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're all true, but I'm thinking Kell Brook. Would I be correct?
Well, first of all, they're not all true. Only one is true. And I haven't got the patience for golf at all. So I play and I put that in there because generally financial advisors, mortgage advisors and the rest of it love the golf. And I don't mind golf, absolutely, but it's not for me. I've not got the patience. I'll probably get to a 10th hole and then launch my clubs in the pond or whatever the case may be. But I do own clubs, so you're right on that point.
Yeah.
I would love to spar with Kell Brook, but I haven't sparred with Kell Brook. For the last hour, I've been sat here smoke. Well, probably not allowed, but I've been sat here smoke, thinking, I'm
you double
level
bluffed
two
me.
Qualified. Yeah, I double bluffed you. Level two qualified yachtmaster.
Wow. Excellent. Do you have your own boat, or is it?
That's the dream. That is the dream. Yeah, that's the goal. So that is the goal. But I just, to be honest, it's I've not been doing it a long time, but I absolutely love it. I think sailing, because the beauty of it is that you can't look at your phone, you can't get distracted by anything else apart from what you're doing. And then once you've experienced that for a few hours of thinking, do you know what, I've not even checked my phone all day, because I've just been watching the wind, watching the tide, watching the sort of the ripples on the water and stuff like that, in terms of where I'm going and what I'm trying to do. Like, there's no feeling like that in the world, because it just feels as though you've been in. I feel as though when I do it, I feel as though I've been a spa all day, just absolutely. And I guess I still get my sea legs for a few days after and throwing my head all out of kilter, but I do love it at the time, absolutely love it. So I love the whole sort of, I think it's just very, I can only like start out as just, it was like another language, another world, but you soon get into it.
Fantastic. Well, what a lovely note to leave it on, giving us all a nice kind of relaxing kind of mood. So I really enjoyed that, mate.
I really try. No, thank you for asking me on for your guest, and thank you for listening.
No worries, mate. Keep up the good work on the podcasts, plural, which I never thought I would have said when I first met you. And we'll possibly get you back on again, see if we can catch up with Ash on the appearances. We don't offer an appearance fee. There's no sort of bonuses or signing on bonuses or anything like that.
Just for the love, Alex. It's just for the love.
Exactly. Nice one. Right, I'll speak to you soon, my man. Thank you so much. Bye. 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 Bye.
Bye. Bye.